The Chris Sheeran Show, only on YesNetwork.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another Chris Sheeran Show on YesNetwork.com and iTunes Podcast. You can subscribe to it for free. It goes right to your smart device. It makes you extremely intelligent. Lou DiPietro, yes, on the Twitter machine. Chris Sheeran, yes, on the Twitter machine. And away we go. So divisional playoff weekend happened.
It was a thing.
It was. And I think we were both 2 for 2.
We were both 2 for 2.
Two and two, I should say.
Yeah, 2 and 2. And listen, we could have easily been 4 for 4.
Yeah.
You know, there's a little bit of a fumble issue.
Yes.
Prevented the Steelers from beating the Broncos, and the Seahawks came back from getting lambasted in the first half to make it a game in the second half. But
crazy.
Pete Carroll did prove why you always take the points.
Oh my goodness!
In the first half,
the 36-yard field goal that he didn't go for.
Yeah,
and then Hauschka missed the 54-yarder. Was
55? Yeah,
55.
And even if they got one out of those two, it's a much different game in the second half.
Yeah, because they're only down 7, and maybe they go for it on fourth down. Maybe the play calling is different on that last drive where they were down by 10,
or maybe
and they
kick
the field goal.
Yep,
to make
or
it
maybe
a 7-point lead.
Maybe in one of those touchdowns they go for 2 to try to cut the deficit to, you know, it's 3 instead of 4,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah,
so
that kind of.
You always take the points, kids.
That's like Doc Brown and the space-time continuum. And the space-time continuum was a very short window for the Seattle Seahawks. And that's the end of my Neil deGrasse Tyson space-time continuum. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. It was very much like the situation with the Giants-Jets game, where Coughlin issued the field goal going for the touchdown, trying to put the nail in the coffin, and it backfired twice.
You don't eschew. When it comes to points,
hey,
you have to chew it up and swallow and get those points on the board. It's not why the Seahawks lost. I mean, the Panthers came out and just smacked them across the face in the first half.
No, they marched down the field with
every facet of the game. They got the ball. They marched right down the field, and Kuechly had the pick six, and away they went. I mean, this is a
and the game was still a lot closer than the 31-24 final indicated. That said,
You got in that game, and they were able to hang on. They didn't score any points in the second half. That's because they didn't need to.
See, there's a worrisome.
They didn't need to.
There's a worrisome thing about that, though, is they were back at quote unquote full strength on offense because Stewart was back.
Right.
Ted Ginn was.
He was still hobbling, man. Stewart. He didn't look 100%. Now he did have over 100 yards and the 2 touchdowns, but he looked like he had
half of his yardage on the first play of the game.
Yes.
But and his first of 2 touchdowns came on the fourth play of the game. But that said, you know, they were at quote unquote optimal health. And their offense kind of sputtered in the second half. Now, Seattle, granted, has a great defense, but so does Arizona, and so does New England and or Denver.
Yeah.
So they can't do that this week or, you know, on February 6th if they make the Super Bowl.
And you know what? The NFL can't lose because either way in the NFC, you have Cam Newton and the Panthers, who have been the story this year all season long in the NFC, or you have Larry Fitzgerald and the Cardinals. And everybody wants.
I'm sorry, Feb 7 is the Super Bowl.
Everybody. I didn't hear it. Sorry. Larry Fitzgerald and the Cardinals. Everybody wants to see the good guy get a Super Bowl ring. Larry Fitzgerald. It'll be his second opportunity to do so. Came oh so close against the Steelers in his first attempt. But you can get either one of those teams in. And on the other side, I mean, for the love of God, enough of Peyton Manning. And enough of Tom Brady already. Is this the last time? God, I hope so.
Yeah.
I am so sick and tired, and let's face it, okay? I just said this to Lou down in his cube. The Denver Broncos, their defense is great, but when they're on the field all day against Tom Brady and that offense, mark it down right here. And we'll talk about this more on Thursday when we break down the division, the championship weekend coming up. I mean, the Broncos are going to get embarrassed at home. By the Patriots. And guess who's going to be in the Super Bowl again? Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. Enough.
Look, here's
enough.
Here's something fun. And I'm going to look up. I didn't get a chance to look up the backside of this yet. But I will look up this. It is guaranteed that Tom Brady or Peyton Manning will be the starting quarterback for the AFC in the Super Bowl.
Since what, 2003?
There was a 3 out of 4 chance it was going to be one of the two of them or Roethlisberger, and 100% chance once the Chiefs lost
right
on Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
The divisional era as we know it now began in 2002, and you've probably seen the ESPN graphic.
It's 12, I have.
12 of the last 13 years.
The only one that...
And 12 out of 14, if you want to go back to the beginning of the 32-team, 8-division era, 12 out of 14 years in that era, the Super Bowl has featured either the Colts or Broncos with Peyton Manning,
the Patriots
with Brady, or the Steelers with Big Ben. And Big Ben wasn't even in the league until the third year of that. So really, the fact that he's been there three times is pretty good.
And I have to say, the other quarterback, like Chris Mad Dog Russo, of course, it's Joe Flacco of the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, in the Harbaugh Bowl.
Yeah.
Yeah. The really weird thing about that is that the Patriots were in the Super Bowl the year before the divisional era, and it's the year they beat the Rams.
Right, that was the first one. Well,
yeah, that was the first one of the dynasty.
First one they won.
Right.
Second one they were in. Parcells lost to the Packers and Brett Favre.
But yeah, that was the first of the dynasty. But on the other side, you look at this. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers played the Raiders. That was the Gruden Bowl
right, the first Gruden Bowl. Correct.
On the other side, you've got Carolina, Philadelphia, Seattle, Chicago, the Giants, the Cardinals, the Saints, the Packers, the Giants again, the 49ers, the Seahawks. The Seahawks at three times are the NFC high in that era. Two of those are back-to-back.
Mm-hmm.
And then the one in 2006 with, you know, the first Steelers Super Bowl. I mean, you got one Eagles, one Panthers. Maybe it's their second. So either the Panthers or the Cardinals are going to their second Super Bowl in the last 14 seasons. One for the Eagles, one for the Bears, one for the Saints, two for the Giants, one for the Packers, one for the Niners. Why do we even watch the AFC playoffs? What's the point?
We know who's going to be there in the end.
What's the point? You can pick one of three teams is going to be there in the end, and you got a 90% chance that it's going to be right.
Who's our Jet Nation guy?
Glenn Naughton.
Okay. This is for Glenn and all the Jet fans out there. All you had to do was beat Buffalo. You beat the Patriots, which is something you needed to do, and you shut my mouth, and I came on this podcast, and I copped to it. All you had to do was beat Buffalo. You didn't. And guess who's probably going back to the Super Bowl?
Tom Brady.
And it's all your fault.
You know,
The
other thing about the playoffs this year is, you know, we made light of the fact last week that it was the first time in ever that all four road wildcard teams won games on wildcard weekend. All four home teams won this week. So we're right where we thought we would be.
Yeah.
One versus two and one versus two. Now, granted,
we are where we thought we'd be.
Now, granted, as I said, two of those games were realistically three of those games were closer than they appeared. You know, Kansas City made a nice comeback to make it a game against New England.
Aaron Rodgers, Hail Mary times two.
Yep. Arizona, you know, the Packers made it a game. You know what? I'll give it three out of four because, you know, all right, we'll say that the Steelers were right in it. Carolina was right in it. Like I said, the Chiefs made a nice comeback, but that may be the only game that wasn't like, all right, you know, it's in the bag, it's over. And even that was really close. So they were all good games. They were all divided by, you know, whatever, 7 points or less, 8 points or less.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, the wild card teams beat the teams that you kind of expected them to beat. The Redskins, did they really deserve to be in the playoffs? Probably
Nobody
not.
From the NFC East deserved to be in the
did
playoffs.
Did the Texans really deserve to be in the playoffs? Maybe not.
They went 7-2 in their last nine games.
You know what? Seattle beat a very good and very game Vikings team, but they had weaknesses, and they probably should have won that game. Not even probably. They should have won that game. And then on the other side,
27-yard field goal.
Yeah, the other side, the same thing. The Steelers were a juggernaut team at the end of the season once everybody's healthy, this, that. I know they weren't healthy for this game, but they still almost beat the Broncos. And then, of course, Cincinnati, you know, pulls a Cincinnati. So you could have looked going into wildcard weekend and say, yeah, I can see all four wildcard teams winning. You could have gone into this weekend and seen probably three of the four, like
Pittsburgh for
quote
sure,
unquote wildcard teams.
Seattle, yeah,
Pittsburgh for sure.
That.
Seattle for sure. And
Green Bay.
I would have thought anybody would see Green Bay. The Chiefs beating the Patriots at home is maybe the only one nobody would have seen because, again, it's the Patriots. The Chiefs had won 11 games in a row, but...
Doesn't matter.
And yet here we are, 1-2, 1-2. And it's Brady or Manning after Brady Manning XXVIII.
I'm glad it's coming down to the top four teams in the league. That's something that you don't really get all the time. I'm glad in that aspect. I want to go back to the Packers game for a second, too, against the Cardinals. There was a vote before this year started, all 32 teams, obviously, that the vote was on the table where both teams would get a shot in overtime regardless of what happened on the first possession.
Mm-hmm.
The Packers voted niet. They voted no.
How'd that work out?
How'd that work out for them? Not so good. They would have had to score a touchdown, but at least they would have gotten a possession to try.
Yeah. See,
as a Packer fan, dude, and I know a couple of them, and they were – you want to talk about the Billy Joel song, I Go to Extremes? Holy moly. Season's over. Can't believe it. Oh, my God. We're back. Season's over. It's like the very definition of being a fan. It's short for fanatic. I get it. But my God, that would have ripped my heart out to lose the game like that, to get another Hail Mary. Because the one in Detroit
saved their season.
And then this one almost got them to the championship
now,
game.
Now, granted, they would have been the six instead of the five if they didn't get that Hail Mary.
Right.
Because there was nobody else in the NFC worth putting in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the six teams that made it were the six teams that made it, and the Redskins at 9-7 were still the sixth best team in the NFC. So,
Oof. Yeah.
I mean, you saw the rest of the records. 8-8, you know, there was a couple 8-8 teams, the Falcons being one of them, that were right there towards the end. But that was it. But, we were walking. I was out Saturday night with some friends in the city. I have a friend who lives in Delaware that came up to the city for the weekend, so me and another friend went down to the city.
Hi, we're in Delaware.
That's right. And we left because we had to catch the train back home. We left as they were late in the fourth quarter. We left the bar we were at. About a block and a half away, as we walked by another bar, we saw on TV the coin toss for overtime, and both of us said, holy you know what, the Packers scored. And then, of course, once we got to the train, we're checking our phones and everything.
Not the best coin flip either. By the way.
Yeah, it wasn't really a coin flip. It was kind of a coin drop, maybe.
I was telling my wife, because she was like, what the hell? You know, the Packers called it, so why didn't they just call it was on top? Because that's obviously where it landed, right? It didn't flip.
No.
So I was like, you know, if we were out in the snow when I was growing up, and we played tackle football in the street when it snowed. We didn't care. We were idiots. We'd tackle each other into the snow banks on the concrete with the frozen ice, snow, whatever. But we would do a coin flip, like the NFL. We wanted to be like the NFL. If that coin didn't flip,
it got reflipped.
We did it again.
Yeah.
We wanted to make it
fair.
Well,
the way you flip it is you kind of put it on your thumb with your forefinger on it and then kind of pop
and
your thumb
flip
up.
It.
Yeah.
Yes. You don't sail it in the air. God almighty.
Going back to the overtime thing, too, I understand what the NFL did, but if they really want to make overtime semi-fair, because really it's the only sports overtime where you don't get a possession. I mean, extra innings, the home team always gets the bat, regardless of what happens, obviously. The NBA is just a five-minute period. So is the NHL. So both teams possess, you know. Obviously,
now it's 3-on-3.
Obviously, it's sudden death in the NHL, but
yeah.
How often does the team that wins the opening phase of an overtime score on that possession? Once in an ever?
Not even when it's 3-on-3, you'd be surprised.
Yeah. So it doesn't happen that often.
Yeah, no.
So theoretically, there's a chance you can win whatever. The NFL not. Why not just do a modified Kansas tiebreaker? Give each team a possession from midfield, and then after both teams have their possession, if the score is still tied, you kick off and have a 10-minute overtime.
So if the first team scores a touchdown, the other team has to score a touchdown. If the first team kicks a field goal, the other team scores a touchdown, the game is over.
Correct.
I like that.
If a defensive score, you know, if the defensive score happens on the first,
it's over.
It's over because obviously the team that gets the ball is going to win.
Right. And you had your possession. That's their possession.
Right.
Game time.
A safety, same difference. Like, yeah. You know, it's whatever.
Makes the butt cheeks a little tighter.
Yeah. Every team gets one, you know, one possession.
I like it.
And then you get a 10-minute overtime from the minute that the ball is possessed for the third time, whether it be, you know, a punt return, the kickoff on a field goal, if both teams score a field goal, the kickoff on a touchdown if both teams score a touchdown, etc.
We'll do more on the NFL, obviously, in our next podcast on Thursday. But and as we make the transition to baseball really quick, before we talk a little Nets basketball, that'll be the last thing we talk about today for obvious reasons, but we still need to talk about them. I want to congratulate my co-host
on
being a named a member of the BB...
WAA.
WAA. Congratulations, buddy.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You're welcome. It's a big...
And in 10 years, right?
Hall of Fame vote.
You have your Hall of Fame vote.
If I maintain active membership, yes, which
you,
I intend to do.
You
yes.
won't.
Right.
But that's big, man. And I saw that the other day, and I saw it on Twitter, and I was like, do I thank him on Twitter? I see the guy every day. I do a podcast with him. I'd rather just thank him on the podcast face-to-face. So
thank you.
Here I am saying congratulations. That's a big honor.
It
and
is.
And the fact that the two people that went to bat for you, pardon the baseball pun, is even makes it even better.
There were two.
Well, Jack Curry.
Yes.
And your buddy
yeah.
at the stadium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they changed the rules. To allow MLB.com writers and editors membership, I believe last year, and that kind of paved the way for everything. It had always been a conflict of interest when we were fully owned by the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
Now that we're, you know, mostly owned by Fox, partially by the Yankees, it's less of a conflict of interest. And websites, and they've kind of changed their model, and it shows. We've talked about the Hall of Fame vote and how that, you know, has been not dropped, but you know, the electorate for that has been modified and weeded out. And so on and so on. So, you know, it's kind of moving in a different direction, and I'm one of the many who's lucky to be a part of it.
Well, congratulations. You deserve it. You're ridiculously good at what you do. And having said that, a couple free agent signings for us to talk about
before we move forward. It's been a busy weekend since we last convened on Thursday, yeah.
So Justin Upton is a Tigre.
He's a Tigre, El Tigre. We have Christopher Davis re-upping to stay with the Bears.
Right after Buck Showalter said,
How much is enough? How did it get so late so soon, Buck? When did the day become afternoon?
You could walk into was it a Target or a Walmart?
Target, I think he said, yeah.
Target, and you could have anything you want. How much is enough?
And he got, what, $161 million?
I mean, yeah, the guy's taken care of. And what was it, a 7-year deal?
Yeah.
Good for him.
It pretty much means he's going to end his career or the prime of his career in Baltimore.
Yeah, good for him. Short porches everywhere.
Yeah.
He could DH the hell out of the Orioles, and yeah, there you go.
And they got Trumbo. They can DH. They can throw it first every now and again. They can throw him in right field. They may still be an option for Cespedes if they want to spend the money. Who knows? But Baltimore,
Cespedes is still out there. Now I just saw something before we came up here about Cespedes. Possibly I saw the Nats and the Astros were in on him.
We should also mention Ian Kennedy to the Royals.
And Ian Kennedy went to the Royals. Yeah, that happened. And he got paid too, by the way. Good luck with all that. Anyway.
Cespedes is interesting. So, little spoiler alert. And we can talk more in depth about it on Thursday because it'll be up by then.
And I love the Mets, by the way. The Mets beat writers all sending out, Murph and Cespedes in D.C.? Just to stir the pot. They love getting under the skin of Met fans.
It's easy because the ownership makes it easy.
They love it. They love it. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The only tighter wallets in the world are sewn closed.
Well,
in the Wilpons. So Thursday we'll have on the .com machine a little article. MLB Trade Rumors every year does their top 50 free agents with a list of like. Projected destinations. They make their predictions, and it's fun to look at. This year in the top 25, they're 4 for 20, and one of those I think was a qualifying offer. So, you know, one of those was Marco Estrada, who they projected to go elsewhere, but then re-signed with the Blue Jays because of the qualifying offer.
Estrada.
So, you know, they didn't do so well, but they had Ben Zobrist and Jason Hayward both going to the Yankees, which, you know, obviously isn't and wasn't going to happen.
Nope.
But there's five of the top 25 left, one of which, the top of which, I believe number 6, is Cespedes. So we take MLB Trade Rumors prediction, which for them was, I believe it was the Angels or the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
I forget who exactly. But we take a look at their prediction, and then me and or I should say AJ Herman AJ? And I, not me and AJ Herman. I'm a Baseball Writer Association of America member now.
Mm-hmm.
Don't end a sentence in a preposition.
That's
all right. AJ Herman and I will take a look, like our own prediction of where they go. And my prediction for Cespedes is Anaheim.
Okay. Why?
Well, they've never been shy about spending.
True.
Even though the purse strings may be a little tighter this year, they've never been shy about spending money. If you look at their projected lineup right now, left field and whichever infield spot Yunel Escobar doesn't play are their two uncertain spots. If Escobar plays third, they need a second baseman, or if he plays second, they mm-hmm. need a third baseman. They have Andrelton Simmons, obviously, that they acquired. They have Calhoun and Trout in the outfield, so they need a left fielder or a center fielder if they want to move Trout to left. So Cespedes kind of seems like the perfect fit there. It's L.A. It's a big market. They have the money. You know, they have Hispanic ownership, which mm-hmm. could be very helpful in terms of, you know, outreach. And the other thing is who on that team is going to hit home runs if Pujols is out or limited early in the season because of his offseason, you know, his foot issues? Obviously, Trout. And who else? What are the Yunel Escobar?
Darren Erstad?
Yunel Escobar all of a sudden going to hit 30 home runs?
He's still playing.
Who? Jim Edmonds, no longer on the Hall of Fame ballot, Jim Edmonds. You know, they have C.J. Cron is going to play first base or DH while Pujols is whatever he's doing. But Andrelton Simmons is not a power hitter. Cole Calhoun had a nice season, but he's not really a second-option power hitter. Chris Iannetta stunk, and they still got worse at catcher by losing him. You know, if they don't sign another infielder, you're looking at Johnny Giovitella or Cliff Pennington or somebody playing second or third. There's no offense.
Giovitella came back.
He did.
After his injury, he came back and he had a great end of the season.
He did, but he's Johnny Giovitella. I mean, he's not all of a sudden going to become a superstar.
I get it.
So the one thing I looked at is interesting. Advanced Metrics for 2015 that ESPN had ranked all 30 ballparks based on, you know, how pitcher friendly, hitter friendly, whatever they were, to the weight of, you know, a 1.0 was pretty neutral ballpark. Anything over one favors the hitter, below one favors the pitcher. Comerica Park was 25th out of 30. City Field was 28th out of 30. Cespedes hit 35 home runs last year. Those were his two home parks, so that's where he played the majority of his games. Angel Stadium is 29th. I leave it as an exercise to you to figure out what was number 30, and it shouldn't really be too hard, given that there was absolutely no offense in that park
Seattle?
At all. No.
Really?
San Diego.
Oh, okay.
So he would fit perfectly as a guy that, you know, well, you can say like, oh, this guy was a power hitter. Like Granderson hit 40 home runs in the Bronx, but hasn't hit 40 home runs in 2 years as a Met. You know, what's pitcher's park versus hitter's park going to do for this guy? Well, Cespedes played in two of the six worst hitter's parks in the league and hit 35 home runs last year. So there you go.
He's strong.
He is.
I think the Mets are stupid for, you know, I mean, this guy, I know he was asking 6 years, 7 years. He wants a long-term deal. But if this all falls through and he can't get a deal with somebody else, he might fall back to the Mets in their lap for a one-year deal. But the fact that they're not in negotiations or trying to deal with him, it's a mistake. But here's what I told somebody, one of the Met fans who lurks the hallways of the S Network, and this is just my gut, my head, what I think. But I think last year was the worst thing that could have happened to the New York Mets, and here's why.
Mm.
Their owners see now that this pitching staff could carry them to the trading deadline where, all we need is a rental to maybe put us over the top. What happened last year? They got to the trading deadline. Couple of rentals put them over the top. We don't have to go nuts bringing in free agents because we could just hang on to the seat of our pants.
Well, really, it was one rental and a couple of role players. Yeah. Not even a couple of rentals.
Yeah, I mean, they got T-Clip.
Yeah, Clippard and Addison Reed and he was Uribe and Kelly Johnson.
Reed was serviceable. Reed, Kelly Johnson, Uribe.
Yeah.
Uribe, and they talked about it. When he got into the clubhouse, that really started turning the clubhouse around. And
I thought he would be a great fit for the Yankees this winter, but yeah. doesn't look like there's anything there.
No, but I think last year in that run was maybe it turned into the Mets ownership's business model of how to run this team until they get back in the black. I don't know. They might be in the black. I have no idea. But this whole Madoff thing, who knows?
It's possibly there. But, you know, they...
But that's what I think. I think that they think, all right, well, if we made the series last year with that formula, why not go after it every year? You know, all these guys are still under... You know, they signed Harvey, right?
I would assume so. I mean, he's under arbitration. I might have missed that.
I think it was a one-year deal.
Well, yeah, he's under arbitration.
Right.
He's now arbitration.
I think it was...
I might have missed that over the weekend.
$1.4 million. So Harvey's there.
$10.4 million.
I think it was 1.4.
No, he would have looked for much more.
I don't
than
know.
That.
You got to look it up. But maybe if it happened,
I might have missed it over the weekend. Yeah,
maybe I saw it wrong. I don't know, but I know Harvey's under contract.
Matt Stegram and Syndergaard are all pre-arb eligible. They re-signed Big Bart. So
the pitching staff
until
is there.
Wheeler's ready.
They stay healthy. You know, they'll be right where they need to be. Somebody will be looking to wheel and deal. Maybe this time Wheeler does go bye-bye. Who knows? But
you know,
they could part with one of their starters, and they could bring in a bat
yeah.
when they need to bring in a bat.
Neil Walker.
That was their big free agent move.
Not even really. It was just a flat-out one-for-one trade.
The
Mets needed a second baseman, and they had a surplus of pitching. The Pirates had the opposite way around and didn't want to pay Neil Walker. You know, Casey Stern rips them every chance he gets on inside pitch and whenever he's on MLB Network Radio. And you can't say he's unfounded. I mean, they could have re-signed Cespedes or gone out and got a guy. They could have even gone out and gotten Denard Span, who didn't have a qualifying offer attached and, you know, didn't get a ridiculous contract from the Giants. He got a good one, but he didn't get a ridiculous contract. They signed Alejandro Diaza to a one-year deal. So now when he plays, they have three left-handed hitters in the outfield. One of which couldn't hit for power if he was playing in Little League. The other one of which is Curtis Granderson, who's still a good player, but probably going to end up being the leadoff hitter, which is he's miscast as. And the third one is Michael Conforto, who's gonna slump. I mean, you can call it the sophomore slump since he came up last year, but he's going to have ups and downs.
Apparently, Bill Cosby is a terrible human being, but he was a tremendous comic, and he had a bit way, way back on audio cassette. You could Google that, millennials, and see what an audio cassette looks like. But it was his whole bit with Noah and the Ark.
Mm-hmm.
One of the lines in his bit was, how long can you tread water? And that's pretty much what the Mets' business model is moving forward, I think. How long can they tread water? Until July 31st, apparently.
We know the Yankees, you know, we know based on what Brian Cashman said on Hot Stove yesterday, the Yankees aren't, this is it. They're done. The team you see, minus maybe a couple of minor additions, minor league guys, is what you're going to get. And, you know, realistically, they have their starting lineup set now that Starlin Castro is aboard. They have six positions, seven if...
They have done,
you know,
you have said that they were going to do this year, with the contracts coming off the books next year.
Beyond the bench, which is going to be, it looks like now, Aaron Hicks, somebody in the middle infield, a backup catcher, and I'm leaving somebody horrendously obvious out, but I can't remember who it is. Their bench is going to be what it is. You know, it's they have six, maybe seven, if Gary Sanchez doesn't win the backup catcher job and goes to AAA for more seasoning or whatever, and Austin Romine, sixth round, or somebody becomes available on waivers, they have seven out of the eight positions readily available with guys in the minor leagues. You've got Slade Heathcott, Mason Williams, Ben Gamel, Lane Adams now on the 40-man roster are right there. The outfield is covered. You have Bird and Refsnyder are right there. That's covered. Pete Cosma, if he doesn't make the team, you know, Donovan, Solano, all these guys, they have ready-made left-side infield. Catcher, they will have Gary Sanchez. Really, a true backup third baseman is about all they're wanting for.
Brian Cashman did exactly what he needed to do.
Yeah.
And this is the first time pretty much in my lifetime that the Yankees didn't go out and spend a yacht load of money during free agency.
I'm missing Dustin Ackley. That's who I was missing.
Dustin Ackley.
On the bench.
Spend a yacht load of money in free agency to rebuild when they see that the last class that they did that with, your CC Sabathias and your Mark Teixeiras, their deals are coming to an end, and you don't want to get your neck inundated with albatrosses. And I'm not talking about the players. I'm talking about the contracts. The players, like CeCe Sabathia, will go out there until his arm falls off.
Yeah.
I'm not – this is not, you know, getting on him for the type of player he is. I'd want him on my team any day of the week. But as far as those contracts, you cannot do that to yourself. You can't do that to your team anymore. Nope. And that's what the Yankees are doing. They like Jack Curry said, they got younger. They got more athletic. Now, at the same time, you could talk about the Nets getting more younger and more athletic.
And their 42-man roster is three deep at every position but third base. So there you go.
Yeah. And you could say –
because I'm including Judge and Pete Cosmo.
The Nets got younger and athletic, more athletic too. Well, that's what they tried to sell you in the preseason, and we all see how that worked out for them. But it's a different scenario.
They forgot less talented.
Well, it's a different scenario for the Yankees, and it's because of what Lou just mentioned. It's their depth, and that is something that the Nets truly, truly lack. Yeah. They have zero depth, and you're seeing that on a game-in, game-out basis now that their backcourt has been pretty much decimated by injuries. Jarrett Jack probably played his last game as a Net, as we heard Devin Carpardian say on this podcast not too long ago. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson had the fractured ankle. He had surgery on it. He's expected to be back this year, but who knows?
Chris McCullough has, you know.
Who knows what Hollis-Jefferson is going to be when he does come back. And like I've told you countless amounts of times, if you're a Net fan and you're waxing poetic about the loss of Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, that's pretty much a, you know, that's the Nets season in a nutshell. A rookie shooting guard who can't shoot and is pretty much your best defender or one of your best defenders, and that's what you're
worried about. That'd be like losing the little foot tab on one leg of a table that was already missing a leg.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty much what that's like.
Yeah, and we taped this. It's Tuesday. So tomorrow – the Nets' only win last week was against a Knicks team that was coming off a back-to-back. The game they won previous to the Nets game was against the Celtics, where
they were coming off a back-to-back, and it was their third game in 4 days.
It was a knockdown drag-out that they beat Boston, and they lost Carmelo Anthony because he tripped over an official and sprained his right ankle. So they beat the Knicks barely at Barclays Center, and now, tomorrow...
They play
the Cleveland Cavaliers after LeBron, Kyrie, Love, and company lost by 34 to the Warriors. They were embarrassed. And it wasn't on the road. It was at home.
Yep.
And now they play the Nets tomorrow. So
that should be interesting.
Having said that, as I texted Devin Carpardian not too long ago, I said, so... yeah.
What's the line on that? It's got to be, what, 30?
The Nets are Alderaan and the Cavs are the Death Star?
I'm gonna keep track of something. Last night starts it at 0-1, but for the second half of the season, I would wager the Nets will probably be favored no more than three times in the final 40 games.
Okay.
Because they still got to play the Sixers twice.
Mm-hmm.
I think they play the Lakers.
Sixers are getting better, too.
But I think they play the Lakers again. They only played the Lakers once, right? Here, they haven't played them in L.A. yet.
That's in April.
That comes on the circus trip.
I think that's March or April.
All right.
Early March or – I think it's early March.
And I know they got to play – I know they got to play the Pelicans. Mm-hmm. So maybe five times tops the second half of the year they favored. But I'm going to see how the Nets do against the spread, because you know they're going to be the underdog in at least 35 to possibly 40 of the 40 remaining games.
Mm-hmm.
They were a 11-point dog last night and Toronto won by 12, so they're 0-1. So I'm going to keep track of that just to see, because that almost, you know, I know sports betting, say what you will about it, but that almost gives you kind of a sense of really how bad things can get when teams that are ridiculous underdogs still can't cover the spread.
They were outscored 31. They had the lead going into the fourth. They were outscored 31-16 in the fourth quarter. Yeah.
And say what you will about depth, and I'll say this before we wrap up for today, and then we'll talk more about this. I have some issues with the NBA's scheduling procedures this week, vis-a-vis the fact that I'll be watching the Nets instead of the AFC Championship game. But
so will I. I'll be here with Donnie Marshall.
But I'll just say this. 3 years ago now, when the Brooklyn era began, and you had the team that had Darren and Joe, and Crash, and Humphreys, and Brooks starting, and you had Blatch, who had a great season, and you had Reggie Evans, who was mm-hmm. a great underappreciated role player, and you mm-hmm. had Mirza coming over mm-hmm. for the first time, and you had a bona fide backup point guard in C.J. Watson. You had all this depth to the point where Josh Childress wanted out because he was a starter a year or two earlier and was like the 13th man on this yeah. team. And now you look at what the Nets starting lineup would be like if the entire starting five went down. And I don't know how that team would win the CBA championship.
No, it's bad. It's absolutely bad. And that's what I alluded to.
Yeah. I mean, you're looking at, I guess, if you consider Hollis Jefferson was a starter. So you consider Jack, Joe, Hollis Jefferson, Brooke, and Thad as your starters.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at some combination of Larkin, Bogdanovich, Sloan in the backcourt, Thomas Robinson and Bargnani in the front court, and then maybe all three of those guards play because somebody plays the three, or
Wayne Ellington.
It's Wayne Ellington, yeah. Wow.
It's bad.
It's rough.
It's bad. And, you know,
that's why Billy King doesn't have a job anymore.
It's true. It just,
honestly,
it got really bad. And it's going to get even worse tomorrow night. That is going to be that's going to be a bloodbath. That's all I got to say.
We can talk about that as well as the scheduling on Thursday, as well as go into our AFC and NFC championship game predictions and anything else that may pop up.
Done and done, sir.
Cespedes is on the move or somewhere
yeah,
else.
Absolutely.
That's what makes these 30-minute podcasts so much better, is that on weeks where we don't have a lot of in-depth stuff or guests or whatever, we can wax poetic about a few things, get in and out. It's easier for you to listen to, and then more stuff will happen in the next couple
yes,
days.
Yes, exactly. Then you get the other half hour of the Magic Hour. But the Magic Half Hour has been completed. For Lou DePietro, I'm Chris Sheeran. We'll see you in a couple of days for another Chris Sheeran Show on YesNetwork.com and iTunes.